Right now, many churches are planning their budgets for the next fiscal year. Your church can support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. by joining the Issues Etc. 300. We're looking for 300 congregations to include $1,000 in their mission or advertising budgets. Find out more about the Issues Etc. 300 on the support page of our website, issuesetc.org. Don't miss your congregation's budget deadline. Download the flyer and present it to your congregation today.
I'm not a real religious person, but I'm somewhat religious. And I'm just wondering if God's telling us he doesn't want us to drill offshore because it sure is setting back offshore drilling.
I understand totally what George thinks and what other people think about marriage being between a man and a woman. And it's a real reversal, really, to accept gay marriage.
But you do.
But I think we could, yeah.
You ever heard the expression, someone's so heavenly minded they're of no earthly good? I always think that's such a bogus thing. It's the other way around. If you're heavenly minded, for the first time, you actually become of some earthly good.
Washington jet drivers love Issues Etc.
You know, just having Craig back for the last couple days, he was only gone for, Thursday through, Wednesday? Is that right? And most of the, that was with the weekend in there. We don't see Craig on the weekends. But not having him for five days of broadcast really took a toll around here. I mean, he came back and the place had fallen completely apart. Totally disorganized. Jeff and I were at each other's throats. And then Craig comes in and peace and order and tranquility is restored. It's amazing how much when you lose one cog in the finely oiled machine that is Issues Etc. and Lutheran Public Radio, how badly things can go. You guys didn't hear it because Jeff did a good job of covering it up with his on par board operator skills. But we are so happy to have Craig back. We can hardly even speak. It's amazing how much nicer it is. And, you know, just he's also the social glue of this little trinity that we call Lutheran Public Radio. He's the social glue. Jeff and I have worked together for many, many years, but it was kind of awkward coming to work here without Craig to smooth things over, to make sure things all goes well. So I have to start today's broadcast this Friday afternoon welcoming Craig Feitinger back to LPR after his very short trip down to Florida to watch one of the last shuttle launches, which went off apparently without a hitch, even though Craig was there. Went off without a hitch. He got to go to Disneyland and no world. And ate some fish, and I understand he wrestled an alligator too, which is I understand that he and his brother Frank actually went to an alligator park and volunteered to wrestle a 15-foot alligator, and that between the two of them, they managed to subdue this creature like the mighty scriptural behemoth. It was, I wish I could have seen it, and I'm just waiting for the pictures. So Craig's after his many adventures and his many travels has returned. So happy to have him back. And we've got email here for the first hour or so of this Friday's Issues Etc. listener email. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. We pick blog of the week, and then let's see what's going on in the second hour of the program. In the second hour, we'll talk with Frank Beckwith about President Obama's fundamental misunderstanding of the pro-life position. Colleen Carroll Campbell will join us to talk about pro-life feminism. And then, as usual, it's soundbite of the week this week. A special soundbite's in there that hasn't been heard for a long time here on Issues Etc. Soundbite from Dr. Norman Nagel, our recent interview with him on the Ascension of Christ. And we'll let you vote for soundbite of the week on this Friday afternoon, May the 21st, in about 90 minutes. Here, our call-in number for the next 2 hours, 1-877-623-6943, 877-623-MY-I-E. You can email us right here in the studio, talkback@issuesetc.org. You can Twitter us at IssuesETC or visit our Facebook fan page. Leave your vote for Soundbite of the Week there. Remember to tell us where you're listening and why you're voting for the soundbite you're voting for. Facebook.com/IssuesETC.
Like the reformer Martin Luther, I have a lengthy memory and a very guilty conscience. I can count all four of the board operator mistakes that I made. I can tell you what they were. Fortunately, unless you were listening live,
you won't hear any.
You won't hear any of them. Our beloved on-demand listeners thought I ran the board flawlessly. But twice during the breaks, I left the mic on. once during the Herb Miller interview, once during an interview. I went in there to talk to you during a break while Molly Ziegler-Hemingway was on
and
the phone.
And if people were listening live, then they would have heard our off, what was supposed to be off-mic conversations.
Yes, yes. Those are two mistakes. Another Herb Miller came out of break, I didn't have his mic on. And the fourth one was we recorded an interview with Dr. Arthur Justice, going to air on Monday on the first Pentecost. I didn't put the spots in order. I didn't put them in sequence, so they run simultaneously. So after the first, after the bump music played, it just stopped, and there was like 5 seconds of dead air.
Oh, is that why there was that silence?
Yes, that's why there was that silence there. But those are the four mistakes. But, you know, we love our on-demand listeners, and they won't even know.
Yeah, our on-demand listeners get the, what shall we say, the baptized version of issues, et cetera, after all the sins have been washed away.
Exactly. So, mostly mine. Some email. Pastor Bill in Overland, Missouri. God bless you from head to foot in the name of Jesus, whose embrace I look forward to receiving, along with seeing the Father's face and breathing the Spirit's grace. The program Friday, May 14th, which featured your comments together with Pastor Whedon's on the hymn Up Through Endless Ranks of Angels, was exquisite. But we all have our off days, too. Yesterday, you commented on the Lutheran Confessions being written over a 25 to 30-year period, perhaps a slip of the tongue. Not concerning the dates of the three ancient ecumenical creeds, the Confessions in the 1580 Book of Concord span a 48-year period between Luther's Small Catechism in 1529 to the Formula of Concord of 1577. Six of the documents were written by Luther or Melanchthon in an 8-year period between 1529 and 1537, and then the Formula 40 years later by André, Chemnitz, and Seinecker. Despite the flip or the possible mishearing on my part, the heart of the matter is that Issues, etc. continues in the Christ-centered, cross-focused, theological tradition found in our Lutheran Confessions. I enjoy hearing Pastor Cum's promotional tidbits. God bless you and everyone else at Issues, etc., writes Pastor Bill in Overland, Missouri.
Well, thank you very much, Bill. And the reason I just threw out 25 to 30, because I just simply wasn't doing the math in my head. It would have been simple to take essentially 1580, which is when the Book of Concord is finally ratified, if you will, and subtract to the beginning of the catechisms and the other writings there, and come up with the right number. But on the fly, I was just kind of shooting in the dark. I mean, it obviously wasn't written in 20 years, but I was kind of shooting in the dark, which sometimes happens when you're on the air. I just wasn't doing the math in my head. And thank you very much. It's nice to always have correction and clarification. We appreciate that most of all from our listeners. And I have to say, smartest listeners in radio, they prove it each and every day. Hey, before you go on, I need to thank everyone who wished me well on my birthday yesterday on Facebook. I got, you know, cards and whatnot at home. But on Facebook, there was just a tremendous outpouring of well wishes and many happy returns on the day and happy birthdays and all of those things. And just a great showing of love and support and caring for me personally on my birthday. Thank you very much for, and I can't thank you enough. I wanted to thank everyone individually. I actually had all the names laid out, and then I realized Facebook doesn't allow you to print anything more than like 400 some odd characters. And if I put all the names in one post saying thank you to, and then all the names, it came out to like 4,800 characters. So there were a lot of people wishing me a happy birthday. Thank you very much. Next, a comment from the Issues Etc. comment line about Jeff's money problem.
Hi, I was just listening to an episode from a few weeks ago when you were talking about Jeff's quest for fish and his inability to find a way to pay for it. And this reminded me of when I was the vicar at St. Paul Lutheran Church in Hamel, Illinois, where Jeff at the time was an elder. And I was driving home from church one Sunday afternoon, and I have just gotten out of my car, and Jeff pulls up right next to me, and he says, "Vicar, Vicar, can I borrow $5 for gas?" And I look at him strangely, and I pull out my wallet, and I give him $5, and he runs off to get gas and go home, you know, with his kids in the car. And it just struck me. An elder of my church just asked the vicar for money. You know, vicars who get paid, you know, enough to eat if they only want one meal a day. you know, that kind of vicar. So, you know, Jeff's needing food or gas or other things and not realizing that he might need food, I mean, might need money to pay for it, it's no new thing. It's been going on for at least, you know, 5 years in my experience. Have a great day. Bye.
Now, what I want to know is, did you ever pay this poor vicar back?
This is vicar, at the time, Vicar Charlie Lehman, now Pastor Lehman. Pastor Lehman, if you're listening, give me a call and let us know if I did pay you back. 877-623-6943, because Todd pricked my conscience when he heard that yesterday. He goes, did you pay him back? And I assume I did. Please let me know.
Interest accrues on stuff like that.
Right, exactly. So, but to put this in context, I travel about 20 minutes to go to St. Paul's Lutheran Church in Hamel. At the time, it's 20 minutes. Now we got this Governor's Parkway, so it's only about 15 minutes, okay? So I'm an elder, and I help to take care of the elements, clean things up after the service, and the kids like to stay with me. So here I am in my car, and I'm below empty, and I got a 20-minute drive. Well, what am I going to do? I see Vicar Lehman in front of me, so I just, you know, hound him down and borrow money from him. So, and he was kind enough to give me the money. But once again, a case where I don't ever carry cash with me.
Well, and I assume that you were able to, I just don't know where there is a gas station about a 3/4 of a mile from.
Yeah, right off the interstate there.
Yeah, and then there's nothing else. You have to brave the no man's land between Hamel and Edwardsville.
It's pretty pathetic, borrowing money from a vicar. I mean, can you get much lower than that?
Yes, not paying it back. That's
no. You know what? You could.
That's worse.
A lifetime membership in the Tiger Pride Basketball Booster Club.
That wasn't pathetic. That was a tremendous honor bestowed upon you and your brother.
It was
by
Thank
your
you
own
very
community.
Much.
I think he's got.
But
me
the
thinking,
fact that it was on the Facebook fan page, that was pathetic.
No, that was also a great honor too. Anything that makes it on the Facebook fan page is a great honor. We'll be right back with more email. Right now, many churches are planning their budgets for the next fiscal year. Your church can support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. by joining the Issues Etc. 300. We're looking for 300 congregations to include $1,000 in their mission or advertising budgets. Find out more about the Issues Etc. 300 on the support page of our website, issuesetc.org. Don't miss your congregation's budget deadline. Download the flyer and present it to your congregation today.
The CLCC has produced a new seminar to help people understand the structure of LCMS churches. So many people today are unaware of their church polity. This seminar can be downloaded for free from the CLCC website, www.theclcc.org. This is available for a seminar, a self-study, or presentations. And think about joining us. Members can download the PowerPoint version for free. Visit us today at www.theclcc.org.
No Sonatocrats allowed. You're listening to Issues Etc.
The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for May is a devotional resource called Stark's Prayer Book. You'll find prayers for patience, strength, sickness, thanksgiving, dying, and more in Stark's Prayer Book. This devotional resource costs $19.99 plus shipping and handling. Browse before you buy at our website, issuesetc.org, or call Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040, 1-800-325-3040, Stark's Prayer Book.
Catechesis, God's way of teaching faith in Christ and love to the neighbor. The Concordia Catechetical Academy presents its annual symposium on catechesis in Waukesha, Wisconsin, June 16th through the 18th. This year's theme, the first article of the Creed. Presentations include catechesis on the first three chapters of Genesis, the fatherhood of God, Christ and creation, atheism, evolution, and the Christian faith and life. Register online at peacesussex.org.
Welcome back. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. We just heard a comment from the Issues Etc. comment line. It puts me in mind of reminding you that you can leave a comment there anytime you like. 24/7, anytime, day or night. Questions, comments, show suggestions. If you're one of our many and beloved on-demand listeners, you got a question from a previous show or a comment you'd like to toss in. It's one way we can almost guarantee that your comment will be heard on the air every Friday. You can also criticize the show, fill in the gaps, and anything there at the comment line. The number 618-223-8384, 618-223-8384.
James in Naperville, Illinois. Moses was to tell Pharaoh, "The Lord, the God of Hebrews, has met with us, and now please let us go a 3 days' journey into the wilderness, that we may sacrifice to the Lord our God. I know God is no liar, but this sounds deceptive. Pharaoh even called Moses once on it, saying he could go if he left the women. So it's clear that there is some kind of difference between the 3 days' journey and a permanent exit to him. What's really going on here?" writes James in Naperville, Illinois.
If you read the narrative, this is pretty interesting, because it sounds like God is telling Moses to lie to Pharaoh. If you read the narrative, first of all, this comes along with "let my people go." All through this, "let my people," it is quite clear to Pharaoh that Yahweh, the God that Moses comes speaking for, wants his people freed from Egypt. There's no doubt about that. And when they go out for this festival, that actually takes the death of the firstborn in all of Egypt, including Pharaoh's household, to finally loosen Pharaoh's grip enough to let them go just for a 3 days' journey to sacrifice. Well, I think the way we ought to read the God does intend to deliver his people, and he knows what Pharaoh is going to do. After they leave, before the 3 days are up, Pharaoh has a change of heart. And he goes to pursue the people. He's not even going to let them have the 3 days' journey. Now, God, how we can sort out God knowing this is going to happen, and yet there is no lie in what Moses says. Had Pharaoh not pursued them, we presume they would have returned, but God would have still demanded their release. As it is, Pharaoh, so to speak, forces the situation by pursuing with his armies. Those armies aren't there to pat the people on their head. Remember, these are people who have left with the loot of Egypt. And by the time they get to the Red Sea, Pharaoh's army is breathing down their necks, and God delivers them and drowns Pharaoh's army. Pharaoh's army is bent on destroying the people. And I think that's the way we understand this. We can never say what would have happened, because what happened happened the way it was. But I think God knows that Pharaoh's going to change his mind. He knows that this is a way that he's going to deliver his people and destroy their enemies at the same time, which is what he intends to do all along. But as far as Moses' request goes to Pharaoh in that particular incident, it's an honest request, one which Pharaoh was originally not going to grant. Then when he grants it at the pain of death, he changes his mind.
Here's Pat in Michigan City, Indiana. Regarding your discussion yesterday on the Ten Commandments, particularly the First Commandment, I've explained to the fifth grade catechism class that just as parents put a fence around the backyard to keep the child they love safe from harm, so our Father in Heaven puts the fence of the Ten Commandments around us to keep us safe from harm. He does this because he loves us, right? It's Pat in Michigan City, Indiana.
Yes, there is a protective function to the Ten Commandments, and that is to say they are ultimately given by God to all men, not just to Christians, but to all men, ultimately for their good. The law is good, and it is holy, and it is right. And were men able to keep it, it would serve as nothing but protector. In a similar way that the law, "do not eat of this tree," served as a protection to Adam and Eve before the fall, as long as they did not violate that law. But what happens when we violate the Ten Commandments, which each and every one of us does? Then that which is good proves deadly to us. The law that was intended to protect us then becomes our worst enemy. taking the opportunity of sin, the law kills. Rather than keeps alive, it kills. So now for Christians, the law has been restored in part to that protective function. For unbelievers, it still is nothing but death. It only curbs their outbreaks of sin by sheer force. But for believers, the law has taken on again that protective function. The law is still good. It is still perfect. It is still right. It is not evil. It is not wrong. It is still from God. It is still God's perfect will. Insofar as we are sinners, it is deadly to us. But the new man rejoices in the law. In fact, the new man in us, that is the saint, we are 100% saint and sinner, the saint never breaks the law. He loves the law. He agrees with the law. He sees it for what it is, a perfect protection from all that is evil. But we are at the same time sinners too. And the old man never keeps the law, hates the law, violates the law at every turn. And again, the tension for us, as in Romans chapter 7 for Paul, is that there's only one eye and there are two There are two laws at work in us. And the good that we would do, we don't. And the evil that we would not do, we do. And although we are 100% saint and sinner at the same time, we are both at the same time. Until Christ comes again and raises us from the dead, we are both at the same time. So as we'll say with St. Paul, according to the new man, we rejoice in what the law gives us. According to the old man, we despise and do everything we can to violate what the law gives us. It is not seen as a gift, but as a curse.
Mike from Canada writes, I just listened to the podcast that addressed the issue of the shortage of calls for candidates. I noticed that there was some discussion regarding permanent vacancy situations due to the congregation's inability to afford a pastor. This is an issue in the Lutheran Church Canada also, and increasingly so, and I presently serve such a vacant parish in addition to my regular call. The question that some of us have been struggling with is how to best deal with permanent vacant congregations. Is it acceptable to have such a situation? How do we understand the role of the vacancy pastor? Is the call that a vacancy pastor has the call from his regular parish or from the vacant parish? Should we be working to not have such permanent vacant congregations by forming multi-point congregations? How does our understanding of the Office of the Holy Ministry and the call direct us in this matter? Thanks for the email, Mike in Canada.
Okay, so what's the basic question here? I mean, boil it down for me, Jeff. What's the basic question?
Number one, should we really be, is it good, appropriate to be having permanent vacancy congregations is one question.
Okay.
Number two is, who's the call from? Is it the call to this vacancy parish? Is he called to that congregation? I mean, if after you serve somewhere, like I think you said, you served somewhere a couple years. I mean, you know, where's the call from? And his last, how does our understanding of the Office of the Holy Ministry and the call direct us in this matter?
Well, okay. First of all, congregations cannot do without pastors. There's no substitute. It's that simple. A congregation that would say, we are now going to be permanently vacant, that is permanently without a pastor at all, has forfeited the right to call itself church because they have rejected the means by which God brings the means of grace and administers the means of grace in their midst. Now, that's different from a congregation who can't get a pastor. I'm thinking about these frontier congregations in the early part of the American westward expansion who for years or decades at a time couldn't get a pastor. They just couldn't. It was not physically possible. Then they did their best to maintain the administration of the means of grace and the preaching of the word among them as they could, or they called a man from within their own midst and did their best to make of him a good pastor. But for a congregation where pastors are available, but they say, well, you know, we just can't afford it. We're not going to have one. They forfeit the right to call themselves church. That's a sin. There are congregations who say, we'd love to have one, but we can't afford one. You know, there are all sorts of practical solutions to something like that. There really are. Now, unless you are completely isolated in the middle of nowhere, there are other congregations with which you could join, formally, informally, borrow their pastor, or even fold the congregations together so that the whole group could have and be served by a pastor as God intends it should be. You know, what do you do when you've got a guy who's been there as a vacancy pastor? He's not called as their pastor, but he's been serving the vacancy, so to speak, for such a long time that he is virtually their pastor in the minds of the people. You know, this kind of a situation can't continue indefinitely, because Christ desires that we provide for, that a congregation provide for regular preaching and administration of the sacraments in their midst. This is part of the reason we have churchly offices among us, like district presidents in the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, to oversee these situations and to see to it that either the practical solutions are found or that congregations don't sit in the permanently vacant situation indefinitely. You know, we just really shouldn't have the term permanently vacant. We're saying something about the congregation's permanent inability to provide for that which Christ commands a congregation should have. We should try to never have that situation ever be permanent. We'll be right back with more email on this Friday afternoon, the 21st of May. If you're a pastor or layperson in the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, we have some timely resources for you. The leadership of the LCMS is proposing sweeping changes in structure and governance. These changes would further centralize power in the church's bureaucracy and decrease the voice of LCMS congregations and laity. You'll find show transcripts about these proposed changes and an updated list of questions for President Gerald Kieschnick's task force. Just go to our website, issuesetc.org, and click Listen on Demand.
Are you uncomfortable with making an online credit card donation? Well, here's an option for you. Call me at 618-223-8382, and I'll personally take your credit card donation and process it for you. Hi, this is Craig Feidinger of Lutheran Public Radio. Call me today, 618-223-8382, and make a secure credit card donation to help support Issues, etc. 618-223-8382.
Listen to what you want, when you want. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, Executive Director of Life Issues Institute.
It's not my intention to frighten parents with young children, but here's information you should at least be aware of. EPA researchers recently published a study showing a surprising worldwide jump in the number of autism cases in 1981, 88, and 95. Coincidentally, these are the same years vaccines were added derived from cells of aborted babies. They're rubella, MMR, and chickenpox. Previously, they thought autism was mercury-related. Maybe not. If you're skeptical, I understand. I was too. And it's too early to come to a final conclusion. For more information, you can read a documented article by a person I trust and get details on available alternatives. Visit today's broadcast link at lifeissues.org. I'll keep you posted on developments.
Life Issues. Stay informed. More informed than you've ever been.
Welcome back. We're going through listener email on this Friday afternoon, May the 21st. I'm Todd Wilkin. I wanted to say one more thing about that notion of the call. When we were talking with Pastor Herb Miller and Professor Harvilla from Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana, about the shortage of calling congregations in the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, I think the term permanently vacant or permanent vacancy came up several times. I just said before the break that we shouldn't use that term. Now, for lack of a better term, I think that's what district presidents of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod use, because what else do you call it? My point is, this cannot be permitted to persist permanently. The doctrine of the church is at stake. A church isn't whatever we want it to be. A congregation isn't defined however we want to define it. A congregation is defined by Holy Scripture, for Lutherans, by our confessions, as they explain the right meaning of Holy Scripture. And our confessions are quite clear. that you don't have Christian congregations permanently without pastors. In fact, you don't have to go any farther than the fourth article of, fourth and fifth article of the Augsburg Confession, where it talks about bringing faith. And then it says, so that God might work such faith, he has given the gospel and the sacraments as instruments. And it talks about the office of the ministry. The two go together. So when we say permanent non-calling or permanent vacant congregation, we need to put gigantic air quotes around that word permanent, because it can't be permanent. That is an indictment of our failure as a church body to do right by those congregations so that they can. What should the rest of the congregations of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod do when they see a congregation that can't afford a pastor? What should they do? We don't have to go all the way out to the entire Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, although we could, and perhaps we should. What should the congregation surrounding a congregation that can't afford to call a pastor do? They should, first of all, see if they can help them afford a pastor. Well, that's our money. That congregation needs a pastor. You say, well, if a congregation's too small, it should just fold up and go away. Well, before we do that, let's give it a chance. But the one thing that we can't allow to be a permanent situation is a congregation with no pastor. The congregations around, you know, I think they could probably scrape up enough money. If you went out far enough, if you drew the circle out far enough, you could probably scrape up enough money to keep a congregation that can't afford a pastor with a pastor. But it would mean that we'd have to think beyond the walls of our congregations, wouldn't it? It would mean we might even have to spare one of our pastors. You know, there are congregations in the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod that have a lot of pastors. They have a lot of people, too, but they also have a lot of pastors. And some of them have been so specialized, they hardly serve as pastors at all anymore. They may have the collar, they may have the certificate of ordination hanging on their office wall, but what they're doing is no longer what pastors are called to do. That's a waste. It's that simple. There are solutions here. None of them are easy. None of these things are easy. But if anyone says, well, it's just an insoluble problem, that's not true. There are solutions.
Another email on the shortage of calls for pastoral candidates in Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. Pastor's wife, husband is a Concordia Seminary St. Louis graduate from 06, now on his second call. Some vacant churches have been told, even by district, don't call from seminary. You might end up with someone older. Fresh out of seminary means without experience. This knowledge that there are guys of all ages leaving the seminaries when a congregation wants a younger kid with pastor, young pastor with kids, and knowing that getting a seminarian is like playing the lottery dissuades some vacant congregations. I think some of the struggling vacant congregations have major conflict which prevents the congregation from going forward with the call process, precisely when the congregations need pastors. And sadly, the longer a congregation is vacant, the more the healthy tend to leave, the ones who care about having a shepherd and less about being part of their club. Why can't seminary graduates be called as intentional interim pastors / missionaries to churches?
Well, you know, I guess it could be done. I think it, again, is when we call pastors, and this is, we've crossed this line in the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod already, sad to say. We've crossed so many lines trying to come up with solutions for problems. Often our solutions are drawn from our own ingenuity rather than from kind of the simpler way of doing things in the church shown us by Holy Scripture. But when you say, could they be called as kind of temporary missionaries to these congregations? Again, that is a stopgap solution. What God desires is that when a pastor's called, that is what should be permanent. That's what should be permanent. Not temporary, not for just a time, but a permanent call. Now, does that mean God will keep them there permanently until they die? Not necessarily. But for all intents and purposes, this is what I was taught when I was in the seminary. When you get a call to your first congregation, plan to stay the rest of your life until God calls you elsewhere. say, I can't stay the rest of my life. They can't afford me for the rest of my life. That's God's problem. That's not your problem. You do your work. Plan to stay the rest of your life until God calls you elsewhere. So again, to call someone and say, well, it's only going to be for this certain amount of time. I mean, to call them is one step removed from the full biblical teaching on what it means for pastors to be called. If you want them to be itinerant, call them to be itinerant, but then move them around. Don't say, well, we're just going to, you know, we're calling them itinerant because what we really want to do is solve this little problem right here in this one congregation.
Hey, guys. I want to say thanks for all your hard work. I was on the CPH website a few days ago and I noticed they had a lot of different CDs for hymns. I was wondering if you could just recommend a couple of good ones. Thank you. Bye.
Well, this is a good question. And to be quite honest, I think we employ a lot of, when we do hymns, this is a pretty hard job. We do a hymn study here. What's the first question we ask, Jeff, when we're getting ready to do a hymn study?
Well, first of all, we have to say, what's the best with the most Christ-centered, cross-focused text?
And so we find this, and then the second question is, and this often makes or breaks a really good hymn for whether it gets studied on the air.
Do we have a recording? If so, doesn't that sound schlocky?
Yeah, and we look for a good, arable recording of this hymn. And you'd be surprised in a church body that has such a rich heritage of hymnody, how some of the best haven't been recorded at all. And sad to say, some of them that have been recorded are, as Jeff says, been recorded, and they sound kind of schlocky. The kind of saccharine hymn recordings, kind of Gaither-esque hymn recordings that make the hair on the back of your neck stand up. But I don't know, Jeff, you handle the hymn,
well,
the
CD. Well, he said at CPH, I would recommend anything from Concordia Seminary Chorus. They sell all their CDs. Concordia Theological Seminary Contari from Concordia Theological Seminary Fort Wayne and the St. Paul Lutheran Children's Choir. They've got all their CDs at cph.org. And if you go, I was just there, you go, and they'll tell you which hymns are on those CDs. So pick out Concordia Seminary Chorus, Concordia Theological Seminary Contari, or St. Paul Lutheran Children's Choir, and you can't go wrong with any of those.
You won't find every hymn there, but you will find a lot of them. And thank you very much for the comment. What's next?
This is Fred in Ewing, New Jersey. Dear Todd, as a pastor, I realize many of my congregation does not understand the Genesis account, and therefore they do not understand God. Just the opening verse, in the beginning God created the heavens and the earth. It identifies that God is a being that does not require anything in the created world, and that all he does is for life, good, and his pleasure. God is a God that enjoys creating and giving in which mankind in this work of God. So I have begun a new sermon series and study on Genesis for us to discuss to help people understand that the biblical account is true and accurate, and not to use science to explain the Bible, but the Bible to explain science. Thanks for listening in New Jersey, Fred.
Fred, it's a great idea. Remember, when you do this, and I'm sure you do, that the reason this is a legitimate enterprise when preaching to God's people is that if you do it right, you will find Christ and his cross in that Genesis account. And I mean, if it's just going to be lectures on the Genesis account, I would save it for Bible class. But if you're going to preach repentance and the forgiveness of sins in the name of Christ, and guess what? It can be done very easily and for an extended period of time from that Genesis account. And I think you're right in identifying the malady, which is that we teach in Bible class about a six-day creation. We teach this when we go through the creed in our catechism classes. Those congregations still use a catechism. And we see people stare at us. They don't look angry. They don't look like they disagree. Maybe even some of them might nod their heads. Doesn't necessarily mean they believe it. If you're really brave, pastors, do a survey of your people. It's going to have to be a blind survey, completely anonymous. And you're going to have to encourage complete honesty. But do a survey of your people on the first two chapters of the book of Genesis. Ask them whether they believe it is a literal historical account. Ask them simple questions like, when the Genesis account says that God made these things, and at the end of the seventh, at the end of the sixth day, on the seventh day, those days being real days, he rested. Is this true? Did he do it all in 6 days? You will be surprised, shocked, and be given a lot of work to do by the answers that they give you, if they're honest. We'll be right back. Is the highest price if you come? I will answer if you follow. Issues Etc. relies on a small group of faithful supporters called the Issues Etc. Reformation Club. These people have pledged to become monthly or annual contributors to Issues Etc., and this allows us to budget our expenses more efficiently. Now, there are four levels of giving. The Confessor, $25 monthly or an annual gift of $250. The Apologist, $50 monthly or an annual gift of $500. The Reformer, $100 monthly or an annual gift of $1,000. And the Patron, $200 monthly or an annual gift of $2,000. Each Reformation Club member receives premiums like books, transcripts, and the I Have Issues t-shirt. You can join the Issues Etc. Reformation Club by contacting Craig. His email address, craig@issuesetc.org. Or you can call 618-223-8385. 618-223-8385. The Issues Etc. Reformation Club.
We're churchmen, not company men. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues Etc. 300. Christ Lutheran, Jackson, Mississippi. Prince of Peace Lutheran, San Diego, California. Trinity Lutheran, Tryon, North Carolina. Our Redeemer Lutheran, Dallas, Texas. Calvary Lutheran, Yuma, Arizona. St. Paul Lutheran, Milford Center, Ohio. Peace Lutheran, Chehalis, Washington. Christ Lutheran, Noblesville, Indiana. Our Redeemer Lutheran, Lexington, Kentucky. And St. James Lutheran, Baltimore, Maryland. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Just go to our website, issuesetc.org, click support, and print the one-page flyer. When your congregation joins the Issues Etc. 300, we'll publicize your congregation on the radio, at our website, and in the Issues Etc. journal. issuesetc.org, click support, the Issues Etc. 300. Welcome back to Issues Etc. There's a congregation, Osceola, Iowa, Emmanuel Lutheran Church, part of the Issues Etc. 300. We don't have 300 congregations yet, but we're working toward 300 congregations to support the ongoing outreach of Issues Etc. This is, when we say this is the backbone of our support, we're not lying. We're telling the truth. Congregations that pledge in their annual budget $1,000 or more are the backbone of nationwide support for Issues Etc. Now, some of those congregations, many of your congregations, are planning early this summer their budgets for the next fiscal year. The deadline is usually July 1st. That means it's coming up fast. Decisions may have already been made, but don't let that dissuade you. Go to your congregation and ask them to include Issues Etc. in your annual budget, just like Emmanuel Lutheran Church in Osceola, Iowa, where I think Jay Wheeler is pastor there. And you can do that by going to our website, issuesetc.org, click support, and you'll find there a one-page, self-contained, printable flyer you can download and print and take to your congregation. Ask them to be part of the Issues Etc. 300, and remember that July 1st deadline.
An email, a couple of emails regarding a hymn study last Friday on the Ascension Hymn, Up Through Endless Ranks of Angels. Bonnie writes, "Thank you for the awesome interview. It made me realize the importance of Ascension Day and bonk myself on the head thinking, duh, that should have been obvious, and taught me a little about a hymn I don't remember having sung before. But mostly it made me grateful for our Father's love and mercy and has reignited a longing for heaven." And this one comes from Karen in St. Louis. "I enjoyed the hymn study today, Up Through Endless Ranks of Angels, regarding Ascension Day services. I had what I would call a high last night when I attended the Ascension Day service at St. Paul Lutheran Church in De Pere, Missouri. It was like Easter. Mark Bender and the choirs, Pastor Smith's sermon, it was all such a blessing. The sanctuary wasn't packed, but there were quite a few people there, in spite of the stormy weather outside. That's all. Just wanted to share my Ascension Day experience. Blessings to all at Issues, etc., writes Karen in St. Louis.
You know, I should have said this before when you mentioned the interview with Pastor Will Wheaton on that hymn. I sit here and I do a lot of interviews. I've done hours and hours and hours of radio. There have been times when I walk away from an interview from a guest on a topic where I say, that was just great. And then there are times when I walk away from a guest on a topic and I say, that was one of the best, I mean, top three in my mind, hours of Issues, et cetera, I've ever done. I've been doing it now for, 10, 11 years, somewhere in that neighborhood. That's saying something. I mean, if my opinion accounts for anything. And that interview with Pastor Will Wheaton on Up Through Endless Ranks of Angels, I do not exaggerate, is in my mind among the top three that we have ever done. And it was all Wheaton, it's kind of in his element, relatively unfamiliar hymn to many, a relatively unfamiliar feast day to many. And I encourage you, if you haven't heard it yet, go to the on-demand page, issuesetc.org. Just go back to Ascension Day. You know when it was, last Thursday. Listen to this thing. It is amazing, truly amazing. And it takes a lot to amaze me now. I mean, I've been amazed too many times sitting in this studio with the guests and the topics that we have. It was tremendous.
Time for one more email. Tim, I'm listening to the program you did about the lack of calls for newly minted pastors and all the work that the district presidents are doing to find calls for these people. I'm wondering if there's a similar level of effort being made on the behalf of pastors who have been run out of their congregations for all the wrong reasons and are looking for a place to minister. Thanks for the email, Tim.
Well, my answer is no. Unfortunately, no. This is one of the dirty little secrets in the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. We have many. But one of the dirty little secrets in the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod is we have a growing group of pastors who are perfectly suited to serve congregations. These are not men who are not fit to be pastors. These are not men who lack some prerequisite skill or aptitude. These are men who are perfectly fit. And yet, for all sorts of reasons, are languishing without a call to a congregation. And the sad thing is, I guess it depends on what district they're in, but some of the district presidents are trying diligently to find these men a place to serve, and they're willing to serve, and some of them aren't. Some of them won't return their calls. Some of them are just letting them sit out at pasture. I don't know why. I think it's scandalous, I think it's wrong, and I don't think it should be a secret anymore. We should ask, what about these guys who, now there are men who are not fit to serve, who are kind of cooling their jets or doing some remedial stuff because they're really not quite yet fit. They're not ready to come out of the oven. That's a different situation than a guy who's perfectly fit to serve and yet sits there with very little to no help from his district president. Sometimes the district president won't answer his phone call. That is scandalous. That is wrong. And a district president that won't try to place a fit man in a congregation for whatever reason is shirking his responsibility.
That's why we're big promoters of the Augustana Ministerium.
Absolutely.
You can check it out, augustanaministerium.org. Part of what they do is provide emergency leave for pastors in crisis and need, to help small congregations keep their faithful pastors, even though they are unable to pay a pastor a full-time livable wage, to put ordained pastors who are without a call to serve in a particular place or are on CRM status back into ministry as pastors and teachers in the church. That's AugustanaMinisterium.org.
It's a great place. I should have mentioned it before when we were talking about the shortage and how congregations really can actually find a way of helping little congregations that really truly can't on their own afford a pastor have one. This isn't rocket science. My dad always said, if your only problems can be solved with money, you don't really have that many problems. A problem that money can solve is not that big of a problem. Not that money's always there, but you know, Christians are generous. If we widen the circle of people who should be concerned about this, we can find ways to do this. It isn't rocket science.